Black voters put Vice President Joe Biden's presidential campaign back on the map on Saturday, where he garnered nearly 50% of the state's vote. In fact, one out of every four Democratic primary voters is expected to be a Black voter in 2020, a year in which the candidate pool started with record-breaking numbers of people of color and is now, again, all white. Today, we want to delve into the Black vote in America. What does it mean for the candidates in 2020 and for essential issues of this general election? Here in Studio 3 to help us do that is Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and a member of the national NAACP's board of directors. Welcome back, Michael.
Glad to be here.
Also with us on the line is Boston Globe columnist and WBUR contributor Renee Graham. Renee, welcome back to you, too.
Good to hear you, Tiziana.
And just a quick disclosure, the Boston Globe has endorsed Senator Elizabeth Warren. So pull up a chair. If you are a Black voter, what's important to you in this election? Do any candidates stand out for you? And if you're not a Black voter, there's no question that this part of the electorate is important. So what should the Democratic Party make of there being no candidates of color left in the race? What are the deeper long-term commitments that the party needs to make to represent core issues important to the diversity of Black voters in America? Please join the conversation. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Michael, I'm going to start with you in general. How would you describe the role of Black voters in this 2020 race?
Yeah, I think one, it's a good place to start to put the disclaimer out that Black voters are not monolithic. We have some recurring themes that we look for in candidates. But if you are in Alabama or North Carolina or Boston, those issues may vary. So I think that's one. Two, there are some commonality among Black voters across the country. We care about criminal justice issues. And as we've seen play out on our television, whether it's mass incarceration or police involved shootings, we want a criminal justice system that is acknowledging that Black Lives Matter. And the Obama administration began that work, and it's been turned around under the Trump administration. So I think we're looking for education, we're looking for housing, we're looking for a healthcare system that is treating us and giving us primary care providers. And most importantly, Black voters want to know that we will remove this Trump, this president, from the White House. And I think, quite frankly, as I talk to people across the country, that's the primary driver for Black voters.
So, Renee, you were in South Carolina over the weekend, which gives you a really, you know, current take. Joe Biden won the support of Black voters there. What was it like, and how does that illustrate the points Michael's just making?
I think what I found really interesting when I was down in Charleston was, you know, going into South Carolina, the media created this narrative that, you know, South Carolina's was Joe Biden's for the taking. They've been saying this for months. Then they kind of forgot about it after New Hampshire and Iowa and Nevada. And so they acted really surprised when Joe Biden won. When I was talking to people down there, almost every single person I talked to, regardless of generation, was backing Joe Biden. And they were doing that because they believed he was the person who was best equipped to beat Donald Trump. And all they really talked about was beating Donald Trump.
And why did they think that Biden was the person best equipped to do that, Renee?
You know, I think a lot of the people I talked to described themselves as progressive and said that there were candidates that they also liked, that they liked Bernie Sanders and that they liked Elizabeth Warren. But they also don't trust white Americans to back a progressive agenda and to back a progressive candidate. So they're going, you know, it's a very pragmatic choice what the voters I spoke to were making. You know, it's not that they have anything against Warren or Sanders. They're just not sure that that's the direction America is willing to go in, even though a progressive agenda would very much help people of color in this country.
It is similar to what we've heard when people have said, I'm ready for a woman president, but I'm not going to vote for one because I don't think my neighbor would vote for a woman president, Michael.
Absolutely. I think, you know, African-American voters, women voters, people of color are aspirational. And when they talk about Medicare for all or free college education, or you go down the list, they would benefit. Communities of color would benefit from that. But winning is important, too. So as was said, people are practical. And there are also conservative voters within the Democratic Party. People can be very centrist, as Clyburn pointed out when he talked about South Carolina. When you take all of that into account, people want to know that whoever the nominee is can win. And you think about whether it's a liberal progressive who has these ideas that can't deliver Congress, because you can win the White House. But can you bring Congress along, and are you persuasive enough? Will we have the seats in the House and Senate to deliver on all the aspirational stuff that you brought us to the table to achieve? I think Black voters are questioning that.
So join the conversation. What is the profile of the candidate that can, you know, quote unquote, can win for the Democratic Party in this year's presidential election? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Renee, put the relationship between Black voters and the Democratic Party into a little bit of historical context for us, if you would, please.
I mean, if you kind of look at that relationship, say, for the last half century, when, you know, the Southern Strategy comes into effect in 1968 with Richard Nixon, and essentially that the Democrats sort of lose regions of the country because of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. So there's been this idea that you know, Blacks are the stalwarts of the Democratic Party. The problem with that is because they generally will not vote Republican, Democratic candidates tend to take the Black vote. And I say Black vote in quotes because, as Michael mentioned, it's not a monolith.
Right.
But they take the Black vote for granted. And so there's a sense that, well, we can kind of pop up in a church, you know, when it's election time. We can run through your neighborhood, but we'll never see you again so long as you vote for us. And I think that's part of what a lot of Black voters are pushing against in this election. They're tired of being taken for granted by the party. You know, when the election started last year, you know, we heard a lot about how this was the most diverse field in the history of American politics. And it was. But where are we now? With a group of white people, for the most part. You know, so I think that's something else. People want that representation. It's like, you can't just have my vote. I need to feel like I'm being represented by the people who you want me to elect.
OK, just to kind of underscore what Renee is saying, I want to revisit 2016 for a second. Here is then presidential candidate Donald Trump speaking at a rally in Michigan, asking for the support of Black voters.
Look how much African-American communities have suffered under Democratic control. To those I say the following. What do you have to lose by trying something new like Trump?
Michael Curry, he goes on to say, you're living in poverty, your schools are bad, 58% youth unemployment. React to all that.
Yeah, it's funny. I would say Donald Trump, President Trump, is the master of the okey-doke, right? He likes to make you think that there is no alternative but him. But the reality is, yes, the Democratic Party has ignored, marginalized, neglected communities of color, and that's true. And we can have that be true and also look at Donald Trump's record and his rhetoric. And it's clear that whether you're a Black immigrant or immigrant of color, this is not the right president for your concerns. If it's health care, this is not the right president. His policies go against everything we fought for. If you're civil rights and you understand the importance of our civil rights laws, he will undermine and is in the process of undermining them now. So I hope Black voters, as the numbers have been around 8%, some polls have it even higher among Black voters. The reality is most Black voters understand and won't fall for the okey-doke that this president is not their nominee. But we should still hold the Democratic Party accountable for, as I often reference Sheriff Tompkins, you would often push candidates here to say, hey, don't just go through our neighborhood, set up an office in Grove Hall. Be visible. I need you to walk through our neighborhoods and talk to people on the streets and not just come for fundraisers. And I think there are folks like Sheriff Tompkins across the country that I know that are doing the same thing.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Teddy, you're on the line. Teddy from Medford. You're on the line with Michael Curry and Renee Graham. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to comment on something the panelists said earlier. I think Bernie Sanders has the best shot of sort of getting the most unified vote. If you look at some of the polls, it kind of seems like he does the best with self-described conservatives and independents. And even in South Carolina, where he did lose, many of the voters in the exit polls said 50% of them supported Medicare for all. So that kind of shows me that I think he has a diverse coalition. And he can unify the base.
So, Renee, there's Teddy answering the question that I asked to listeners, was what does that profile look like of the person who can win? What's your reaction to that?
I mean, I think he has a point. I do think that there are lots of people who like what they're hearing from the more progressive candidates. The question is that the agenda that most Americans are going to back when they go to vote? And I think that there is a people aren't certain that that's necessarily going to be the case. So, you know, look, I think in a different election, if you weren't opposing Donald Trump, I think a progressive agenda would do much better. I think people would have the sense that we can kind of take a chance and maybe go a little further to the left because we're not worried about what will happen if the nation rejects that and goes with Donald Trump. But it's because Trump is there that I think the progressive message isn't getting the traction it should get in all communities of color.
All right. I want to add another caller here because I think it's going to follow on to that. 1-800-423-8255 if you want to join the conversation. We've got Dave on from Millbury, Massachusetts. Dave, go ahead.
Yes. I would like to know why black voters would think a moderate Democrat would be able to beat Trump if Trump already beat a moderate Democrat.
Okay. Great question. Michael, let me turn that over to you.
Yeah, I don't think it's that simple. I think people feel like there's a certain character type, a certain record that's necessary to beat this president. I think Joe Biden's record, I think African-American voters increasingly look at him as a solid person on the issues. He's worked on the Affordable Care Act. He's worked on the finance issues on Wall Street, along with others, and Senator Warren. I think it's clear to America that, at least to black America, that he's a viable candidate. I've said on your show and others in the past that I think if they had another more exciting choice, Biden would not be their choice. And they would walk away like they did from Hillary Clinton for Obama. But he is the, I think, as many African-Americans view him, to be the most solid candidate. Now, that's weakened because he's done so poorly in debates that even the African-American vote on him is shaky. But they don't believe that Bernie Sanders has the message, the approach that's going to bring together more Americans and maybe win the middle, win those independent voters that will come over and give him a win.
So, Renee, Michael, go ahead.
I just want to be clear. I'm not painting Joe Biden as a perfect candidate by any stretch of the imagination. He has political baggage from the 1994 crime bill to Anita Hill. Those are issues that black voters certainly look at, you know, and they give Joe Biden some side eye on that because he still hasn't fully explained his actions in those circumstances. But given the current political climate, he seems like the best choice. But again, you have to remember, we're what? Two caucuses and two primaries into this thing. You know, there are still places where this can go that we aren't anticipating. Last year, this time, Joe Biden was the prohibitive favorite. He dropped off. Now he's suddenly back. I think there's still a lot of room for this race to change.
And just Bernie has a huge hill to climb. You need to think about the Alabama, North Carolina, Tennessee, Arkansas, Virginia. Over 25% of the voters are African-American. If he can't get on the ground and really start to move the votes in the black community, he has a challenge. I know he skipped Selma this past week. Many of the candidates went down to Selma with Congressman Lewis to walk the Edmund Pettus Bridge. But he did go and meet with Reverend Barber of Moral Mondays in North Carolina to kind of sway him and his support. He's going to need to really get that. If he can't get the black vote, he cannot win.
Yeah. So we've talked a number of times already in this conversation sort of about polls and how black voters look like they're polling, et cetera. One of the things that's really becoming very clear is that polls statistically seem to be undercounting and underconsidering black voters. So how realistic of a picture, Renee, do we have, especially from the early primary states and early polls, of where black voters, who you have said a couple times today, are not a monolith, right, are thinking and caring about in this race?
Well, I think one thing everyone should have noticed coming out of South Carolina is how different this race might be if the first two states had been Nevada and South Carolina instead of Iowa and New Hampshire. Because the wins that people were seeing, like, say, that Mayor Buttigieg was getting in New Hampshire and Iowa and also it looks like a bit of a mirage now because they did so poorly when you had a more diverse electorate. So I think there's a mistake. You know, look. People of color are going to decide the next Democratic nominee. That's a fact. You can throw all the polls out. That's the way it's going to go. And the candidate who can manage to hold on to those populations is the candidate who's going to win. If you can't do that, if you can't figure out a way to break through, then you're going to be out of the race, like Amy Klobuchar, who had dismal numbers with people of color, like Mayor Buttigieg, who had, you know, dismal numbers. You have to win that vote. That is the background of the Democratic Party. And if you don't have it, your campaign's going to fail.
Okay, so Michael, pretend I'm one of the remaining candidates who just heard what Renee said.
Yeah.
And so now I turn to you and say, understanding that there's great variation across the country, list for me the issues that I must focus on and where I need to be on those to make sure I win that vote.
Yeah, I think we're in a pretty good place with the Democratic nominees, those that are still in the race and those that were. You know, folks understand the historic time that we're in to deal with criminal justice issues, how we should be advancing the Affordable Care Act. There are still millions of uninsured people and underinsured people in America, and many of them look like me. They're black and they're brown. So I think that our candidates in general have the right message. Some are being more aspirational, Medicare for all and you know, free access to education. The challenge is we're at the point now where people say, okay, it's about whether you can put up or shut up. Do we think that you as a candidate can beat this man, Donald Trump, when it's just the two of you head up? And I think there's a challenge with some of the candidates. I think whether there's an embedded concern among voters that a woman can beat Donald Trump, and that disturbs me when I hear women say that, but I understand it as an African-American when you say a black person. I don't think a black person can win when Obama ran. We have to get beyond that, but we're still there. And I think, quite frankly, we're operating based on a reaction to Donald Trump versus an aspiration around issues. That's where we are. All the stakes are on whether this man gets to serve an additional 4 years.
All right, I want to grab at least one more call before we run out of time. We've got Preston on the line from Cape Cod. Preston, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm listening to, I came in late, but I was just watching Public Enemy endorsing Bernie. And from the last time, if the moderates steal it away from him with superdelegates and he has a majority, then whoever it is will definitely lose to Donald Trump, because the progressive is so strong, they will not vote for the moderate candidate. They just won't do it.
So, Renee, this is an interesting point. Thank you, Preston. I saw you react to somebody else on Twitter this weekend who made a similar point, and you had a very strong response that was a position of privilege. Do you want to talk about that?
It is a position of privilege. If you can say, well, if Bernie doesn't win, I'm not going to vote, that means the policies of the current administration will not affect you, and you do not care about the people it's going to affect. And that's a selfish attitude. And also, you know, at this point in our country, you're not just voting for a candidate. You're voting for the preservation of democracy. Because, you know, if democracy was on the ballot 4 years ago, as President Obama said, this time around, it's on the ropes. So if you are so into yourself that you feel like, well, I'm not going to bother if I don't get my candidate, then you're essentially voting for Donald Trump and the status quo. And there's nothing more establishment than voting for that.
So, Michael, you're nodding so vigorously.
This one is an important one, because I think, one, there's going to be some intentionality on the right to get voters, particularly African-American voters, to not vote for anyone. I think they're going to play that up. I think whether the Russians or whoever's involved will put those messages out on social media. The reality is this, and I think this is the responsibility of organizations like the NAACP and others. We got to go to voters and say, okay, ultimately, it doesn't matter who you plan to vote for and whether they made it to be the nominee. Show up. Because we know if you show up, you'll do the right thing. Whatever the right thing is a nonpartisan organization, but we got to show up. So if you don't have a Barack Obama on the ticket in 2020, if you don't have the candidate you wanted, maybe you were supporting Bernie Sanders and he didn't become the nominee, hypothetically, we don't have it is detrimental to our communities and everything you care about that you show up and vote. And I think that message is all of our responsibility.
So, Renee, we've only got a little bit more than a minute left, but during that time, sooner or later, 2020 will be over, and it will be 2021.
Will it?
And then, yeah, good point. And Democrats will need to ask, how do we engage deeply with Black American voters over the next 4 years, regardless of this outcome? What's the mission there?
You know, I have to say a template for me, at least in this election cycle, has been Elizabeth Warren. And the way she has centered especially Black women in her campaign, whether she's been talking about education, HBCUs, infant mortality rates, that's how you do it. Now, it hasn't necessarily translated into the kind of support that I think a lot of her backers would have hoped for, but I think that's what you have to do. You have to put it in the forefront. You can't come into these issues like you just crammed for the exam and now you're just sort of regurgitating what you just read in the textbook. There has to be a sense of a deeper commitment to these issues and to these communities for it to make a difference.
Okay, and Michael, in 15 seconds or so, anything you want to add to that?
We're used to people promising things to us as a community, and many of them are Democrats, and they don't follow through, and then they put crime bills and other things in place. People are going to hold their elected officials accountable, especially as younger voters engage. And I think you have to show up and show that you're going to do these things that you say you're going to do. I'm excited because I think many of the nominees, the candidates, are speaking truth and are recognizing when they've been wrong in the past.
Okay, that's Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and a member of the National NAACP's Board of Directors. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
And Renee Graham, Boston Globe columnist and WBUR contributor. Renee, thank you.
Thank you.
And listen, at the top of this segment, I said that the remaining candidates were all white. I need to correct myself because, in fact, Tulsi Gabbard, who was a remaining candidate, does identify as a person of color.